Okay, so this is going to be a quick code run through the tech counter application. It just shows how to write a trivial data saving Python Qt application. So I'm assuming that you're looking at the code line now, the numbered code line. Line one is just a call to the Python interpreter. Line three through to seven and eight are some imports. The logging module that imported on line three is so that we can handle messages to standard out or to a file if we choose for the application, of various levels from debugging through to exceptions. It's nice to do this because inevitably with a program you want to put little debug printout to standard out just to see how things are working, if they're working as anticipated. But if you log as in debug mode, it means when you actually use your application for real, you can tweak just one line of code and it means that those printouts aren't going to get printed every time. Okay, it's easy enough to go back into your code later on, remove those lines, all those print statements. But I find that inevitably I end up entering them again when I come back to revisit the code, find something isn't quite working as anticipated, I tend to put them back in. So it's easier, in my opinion, to use logging, set the default as debug, and change that as necessary. We also import OS, which is operating system specific calls, pickle, because we are going to pickle a Python object, shutil, which is shell utilities, because we're going to be moving some files around, system, which we need for the command line parsing, we need that for the system platform, because we want this to be able to run on two platforms, both Linux and Windows, GNU Linux and Windows, sorry. And also then we've got to import the GUI tools from PyQt4, which is line 8. I mentioned this was going to be available for Windows or GNU Linux. The base directory, which is a string variable initiated on line 10, is just a null string if it's Windows in the sys platform. Otherwise, we can just make a call to the OS module, use the getenv function, and which returns a string value for home, which will give you the path normally to that's the same as the tilde in bash. So for me that would be /home/Neil. Because getenv is a call, it's a sort of a get call to a dictionary, if it doesn't find the home key value, you'll get none returned, which is why we had one user of this code, the person who initiated it, run this on Windows, it fired an exception. That was all of what happened, is that getenv had returned a none, so the operating system couldn't understand where to put the file. Right, then we've got some constants at the top here. A constant is in Python all variables can be changed, but the convention is to use uppercase for variables that are set at the start and remain the same. So we're using pickle path here, which is the path to our pickle file for the tech events, which is just a list variable. And we've also got a list of technicians. By putting these at the top of the file, line 12 and 13, we make it easy to just revisit this code at a later stage and just change those. You know, for a file which is not big enough to, for an application that's not big enough to need its own configuration files, just put in lists and strings at the top is what is a conventional way of doing this. Okay, now we then move on. If we look throughout the file, we've got five classes which are used in this application. The first one is simple class, I've called it event. and that inherits from object, as all new style classes should do. Excuse me, I'm just going to have a sip of my beer. After that, we've put a doc string, and just a stylistic thing here, when I place doc strings, I tend to use three single quotes rather than three double quotes. Double quotes is the accepted standard. I've got into the habit of just using single quotes, so I'm afraid I'm a bad boy there. But it's good just to say this custom class event is a data type storing event attributes. And the attributes, as you can see, that we use, when we create an event object, we pass two values into the initiator function, the special function underscore underscore init underscore underscore. Everyone, you should all be aware that the underscore, double underscore functions in Python are the private functions, and there are two types of private functions. There's a single underscore and a double underscore. The double underscore types, when the Python interpreter it does these, it actually hashes those function names so that they are extremely obscured from anyone who could be trying to run that code, trying to make attribute calls in a malicious fashion, I guess. So they are they are callable from the outside, but they're obscure, which makes it, security by obscurity. That's my understanding of that. Irrelevant, really. The name is there for our intents and purposes. So event has got three functions. The initiator, I've also given comp. If we compare two objects, the only thing it's going to do is say, if you're comparing two events, just compare the time. If the time's the same, the event's the same. It's crude, but that comparison means that if we call for any ordering of events, if we try and sort a list of events, that means that the event objects that we're comparing by calling that function, for instance, if we try and sort a list using the sorted function, or if we use is event 1 greater than event 2, the comp function will be called. Self and other will be passed into that. So event 1 is greater than event 2. Event 1 will be the self, event 2 will be the other. If one's greater than the other, this comp function that we've overwritten from the object's own underscore underscore comp function is going to come into play and just compare the times. I hope that's clear. The third function that event has is just a representation. This means that if we try and print the event object, it's going to give us that format. It's going to say this technician called at whatever time. This will all become clear once we get through to what the application actually does. Okay, now the next class we've got is event data. Now this application is just an application to log when technicians call a supervisor. So the supervisor sat at his desk by the phone. The phone rings. He needs to say that I've had a phone call from technician Brian at this time. And this, it's something. To computerize this doesn't necessarily seem that necessary, but it just means that, seeing as the supervisor sat in front of a computer anyway, he just clicks a button and he's got his data stored. So, what happens with event data? When it's initiated, the event data, as we can see by looking at the init function, line 35, it opens the pickle path that was defined when the module was first loaded and looks for a file in that area. It opens that file and creates that file object, which I've labeled as F. On line 35. If the file is not present, we'll get an exception, of course, which will move us on to line 42. So if that file is not found, the exception is triggered and we move to line 43. So we will at that point just say we haven't found any previous data, let's just create a new list. That should only happen if we've cleared the list or deleted that file on purpose because we've dealt with the information in whatever way. So I hope this is clear. When the application loads and an event data is initiated by the main application, we'll see when this initiation call is called later on. In fact, I'll tell you now. That init is called down at line 141. Where you see on line 141, you see self event data, so the event data attribute of the main window is an instance of the event data class. We only have one event data class called in this application, which makes sense. Anyway, back to line 35, we've created our file object F. We then pass that into the pickle module, say load it, and that creates an event list. So now we've got the situation where the event data object has an attribute event list, which is a list. Believe me, at this point it is just a list, because remember, we will have created that, we would have written that file. I've then made on line 30, we then close the file object, because we don't want to, you know, just for, well, for obvious reasons, I hope. Line 38, we make a little debug statement saying where we loaded the data from. And what we also then do, as you can see, is we make a backup file. So, I want to, if the application is running, I want to load all the data into it. I then move the stored data on the disk to a tilde file. So this is almost like having a lock, if you like. If we were to run two versions of this application, the second application wouldn't find the data on that pickle path. We could actually, at that point, we could actually use that fact that that pickle path has been moved to say, the application is locked, or there are endless ways we could run this. Okay, because the danger is, of course, is that there's having two instances of the exact same application where they're both writing to the same file path, we could end up with a data loss situation if application 2 overwrites application 1's file. Another sip of beer, please. Okay, so that's our event data. Our event data really only has, as you can see, one real attribute, which is it holds an event list, which is actually a list of objects of type event, which we've just discussed. So event data holds a list of objects, which are these event objects. Event data also has some functions. It's got add, which is where you can add an event by passing in a name and a time. It creates an instance. You can see line 47 is sort of two calls in one, if you like. An event object is called, the initiator is called there with name and time passed in as arguments, so that creates an event object which is appended to the self event list. Okay, we've got a clear function which just wipes all the data. I've given the user the option just to clear anything. We've also got an output. The output and function at line 52 prints out the event list. I'm not certain. I think that's called maybe at quit. I don't know. But what we're trying to achieve with this event data object is it's going to do everything that we need to do with our event. We're going to have it be able to display or just show the last few events or save to a file or print it out. We could also, at this point, we could use that event data to output to an HTML format or to output to a spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet. Whatever we want to do with the data itself is contained within that class. Right, let's move on. I hope all of that is quite clear. One thing that might not be too obvious here is that the function toReadableList, which is line 59, basically just iterates over the event list of the object and calls the string. It tries to create a string of that event. So line 65, the list that's been populated there is not a list of events, but it's a list of the events in readable form. And by calling string event on line 65, that is where we are calling the double underscore repra double underscore function on line 26. Okay, a class at 84, tech widget, which is inheriting from the Qt GUI module QWidget class, is just a widget which contains both a button and a label. As simple as that. When the button is clicked, a signal, the label of that particular widget is updated and a signal is emitted. I hope that's clear. So let's look at the initiator of this tech widget. Okay, first thing, line 88, I'm creating a global attribute clicked of the class. So that is a class attribute, it's not an instance attribute. This is a bit like putting our attributes at the top of the module before we wrote any functions. The same in a class. You know, the first indentation level in a class, anything which is defined at that point becomes a class attribute. So clicked is a class attribute. Tech widget of any description will have a dot clicked attribute available, even if it hasn't been initiated. So tech widget, two brackets after its name. Tech widget without any brackets after its name, dot clicked, would make sense to the interpreter. Okay, let's look at this. So the initiator for tech widget is line 90. We insist upon a name being passed in, which of course will be a technician's name, and we give the option of specifying a parent for the widget. That's just for the Qt hierarchy. All widgets can be parented or can be self-owning. So, line 91, we need to actually call the initiator of the widget class, which TechWidget is subclassing. So by doing that, we call again the double underscore init, but passing self as the first argument into that. So what we're saying, we are the widget class which we're inheriting from is getting it initiated, but we're also telling it that when we're passing the instance in as the first attribute of that init function. That means that the base class knows which instance we're referring to in all these functions we're overwriting. I hope that's clear. Okay. We keep a pointer to the name variable that we passed in the initiator by making it an attribute of the instance. So self.name is the same as the name. Self number is 0, right? The number is the number of times that the button's been clicked. I'm just making that increment later, you will see. We create a button with the string name on it. We create a label and we keep a pointer to the label. You'll notice there the button we don't keep a pointer to. The variable button is only local to that init function. Because we don't need it again. Once we've connected it to a slot, we don't need to refer to the button. However, the label, we need to update it in other functions. So to make it global to the class, we make it an attribute of the instance. Okay, we create a simple VBox layout. We add the button and the label, and then we set up a function. Sorry, then we connect a slot to it. So a line 101 button dot clicked dot connect to the self take call function of this instance. So what that means is when the button is clicked, take call. So when the user does that, when the user clicks on the button, take call function is going to be called. Let's look at take call on line 107. That increments the number, it updates the label, and it also emits the clicked signal that we created on line 88. So clicked emit with two attributes. It emits two arguments, sorry, in that signal, the name and the time. So line 110 has two Python objects, the name and the time. And if you look at line 88, we create a qtcore.py qt signal with two objects. So whenever we call clicked, it is expecting to have two arguments, which is what we pass to it at line 110. Okay, now if that means whenever that widget is clicked, it will pass into the actual Qt event loop itself that data to be floated around to see if anybody's looking for it. Okay, and of course the update label should be very straightforward at line 103. That should be completely self-explanatory. Another sip. Line 112. Okay, this is another class. This is a list dialog. This is a dialog box that pops up. Sorry, this is a dialog box that can be made to pop up as soon as it's initiated. Let's go through the code. Hopefully this should make sense. Line 116, again, we initiate it with an optional parent. We call the base class initiator at line 117, just as we did earlier. We set a window title. We create a button box with a standard button in it. We do a bit of appearance tweaking on line 121 by saying let's put it in the center. We create a layout and look at line 123. Layout equals Qt GUI Q VBox layout self. So self in that case, if you look at the initiator for a Q VBox layout, the argument that we're passing into there is effectively parent. So by doing that, by passing self in at that point, we're saying that the layout belongs to this dialog, and that means that the dialog automatically becomes the dialog of that. Sorry, the layout becomes the layout of that dialog, without having to kind of say set widget or any of these other ways of associating a layout with a dialog. That one line does it all for us. Okay, line 125, we create a list widget, keep a pointer to it, which in truth I needn't have done. No, I do need to do that. We actually keep a pointer to the list widget so that other people using that class can access the underlying list widget, and we lay it out, and we also set a size hint to 132. Size hint is a function which we don't call in our code, but the application itself will call that under the hood, so to speak, whenever it displays it. Now the list, yes, yeah, so if we were going to initiate a list dialog and do a dir on it, we would find lots and lots of functions, things like exec and minimum size, and all of these things come from the base class Qt GUI Q dialog, which is inherited from on line 112. Right, the main class 136. This is a just a window, a main window application, if you like. So 136, we start the code for that class. We inherit from the base class QtGUI QMainWindow, which we call the initiator of again on line 138. I've missed off a doc string on that one, which is bad of me, but never mind. Set a window title on 139. We, at this point, 141, we initiate that event data class that we've created. So this is us using one of our own classes on 141. And we keep a pointer to it. So the window has its own event data, which is a custom data object, as we said. We create a widget, which we're going to use for our display, give it a layout. Again, you can see we're passing that widget into the VBox, sorry, the HBox layout in the initiator of that, so that the layout knows where it belongs. We now, on line 146, iterate over the text list that we had right at the top of the module, and we create a widget for every one of them. And we add that to that layout, add each one of them to the layout, and then we say, right, use that widget as the main widget for the main window. At line 153, we call the menu bar. We say, let's have a menu bar for this main window. And all main windows have a menu bar attribute, but they're not initiated until they're called in this manner. So you do see QtGUI applications without a menu, they just have never had that called. I then create some queue actions, I get some actions, some icons, and throw them all together in a menu file. Now having a menu for this application is a bit dumb, but I do think that this application itself may eventually just become a SysTray application, where you can use that, the menu that we've got here, we can just associate it with a right click, and the left click can have the application possibly without even that menu bar being visible. We can hide it. But it's nice to have that all set up and linked, so that as we progress the application, it's easy to, you can imagine this being a little icon in the bottom. Left click, you've got a list of your five or six technicians that you can click in front of you, and right click gives you your more advanced options and quit functions, etc. Okay, now let's see what functions have we put into the application. Oh, those actions were all connected to the various functions, which are show list, clear events, and a special function at line 183, which is the close event. So if the user, let's look at 183. If the user closes the application and confirms that they want to quit, I've asked the data class to save itself, and also asked it to print itself to standard out before we go on to close. I think the show list, which is where it calls that dialog, initiates the dialog and executes it. Line 172 to 175 should all be clear enough. And I think the standard Python if name is equal to main at 195 should also be straightforward. I, at that point, line 196, configure the logging module, and create an application, create a window, show the window, and then initiate on line 200 the event loop of the QtGUI Q application. I hope that is all pretty clear to you all. So the entry point of the application is effectively line 196. Okay, I hope that is helpful. Any questions, don't hesitate to get back to me. Thank you very much.